I suppose.
You're kind of curious, though. I mean, you say that you were kind of aware after the bull nearly, you know, smashed you in. But did you ever have just like that wake-up call? Like, oh, my gosh. I could really, really hurt myself.
Well, that's about as close as I came.
That's the closest?
Yeah, it was a close. There were some other ones. I remember Steve telling me after the fact, I did a demolition derby story out of Shakopee. And, of course, that's kind of a rough and tumble event. But it's, you know, but the guy who owned the track, I just went blank on his name, Tom. Anyway, it starts with an O. But the point is, he later made a point of calling up Edelman and saying, You might want to have that guy looked over. And Steve said, what do you mean? He says, well, he did some things out there on the track. He took some chances that he really didn't need to take. I don't think he's quite right.
Now, how about when a demolition derby guy is telling you, this guy might be a little bit crazy for us here.
Well, yeah.
Here's a little audio clip here. This is one of the most dangerous stories I think you ever did. Let's play this audio, Tom.
Welcome back. I know many of you out there take part in aerobic dancing, and you probably think that this is really the newest thing and just came about. Well, that is not true. Actually,
it
started a long time ago, and it was called clogging, of all things. Our field host recently took a lesson in the art of clogging. Here's Kerry Lumpkin. He has more on all you cloggers out there.
I'm on my way to the Homestead Picking Parlor. Now, it's in Richfield, and most of the time, it's an ordinary enough music store.
Good, great
but
store.
Every so often, it's a place to take dancing lessons. It's called clogging, and although I'm not much of a dancer, I've always been fascinated by this particular dance style. Now, I found out later, most of the people in the class had never clogged before either, and yet they picked up the basic step very quickly, and once they had that, they were ready for music.
Hey. Of course, this is radio, but you can just imagine the grace, the subtle qualities I'm bringing to this.
These really are beginners mostly, and at this point, they've learned only two or three steps. Before the class is over, they'll learn eight different routines, as well as a few variations on each. Now, I have to admit, my initial efforts were not quite as successful.
I'm being modest. I was actually pretty damn good. Excuse me, I can't say
that. We're learning a style found in the Appalachian region of the United States. And although it's considered an American dance, its roots are elsewhere.
Gary, everyone was clogging like Herman Munster compared to you. I mean, look.
It was. It was kind of embarrassing, you know. And I actually had to kind of rein it back in just a little bit.
First of all, you talked about the clothing and the style. Imagine this. I mean, this is on TCMedianow.com. The style of the cloggers. That there you go. That was. They were dressed. What you'd assume cloggers would be wearing.
I had an ex who clogged. And it was a little odd to watch, a little odd. It's still impressive though.
Well, I went along because I was such a darn good sport for those kinds of things. And basically, I've always considered myself a snappy dresser, and sometimes I had to kind of, like I say, dial it back a little bit.
Yeah, one of you TV guys coming to our clogging studio, you and your automobiles and your $50 haircuts.
I've only known you for about 50 minutes now, and I can't see you dialing anything back. Just gonna put that out there.
Well, my nose is growing just like Pinocchio's, too, so you have to kind of remember that.
This is Good Company was a very popular show, but for some reason they decided to end it in 1994. The Hubbard family decided that they could make more money with George Hamilton at 3 o'clock than Good Company, which was unfortunate for all of us because it was kind of like a part of our childhood was gone once Good Company went away. You always kind of counted on it. This clip I want to play here is from the last episode of Good Company, last program. This is you and Stephen Sharon kind of talking a little bit about some of the highlights of the last 12 years.
Anyway, so the rodeo was kind of the kickoff, and it seems to me that would be a good place to start.
Let's do it.
That first story.
Yep, the rodeo.
Yes, the rodeo. Very risky because when you deal with animals, well, the unexpected can always happen. Like when I tried steer wrestling. I mean, I was so intent on the horns, I forgot all about other parts of the animal, and so the steer stomps on me about three times. And so then, having not realized just how lucky I'd been, I pushed things too far when I tried clown bullfighting.
Hey, here it is.
I'm in one of those big barrels.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And the bull's trying to hook his horns on the inside. He's trying to get into it. Get inside the barrel and get me. He's a man-eating bull.
Yeah, I had him.
Now, here's another risky moment involving an animal. While scuba diving off the coast of Mexico, I tried to hand-feed a moray eel. And it worked. The eel, very cautiously to be sure, responded to the lure and snatched the food several times, swallowing it whole. And then, a bit later, he came way out, went for the fish, and I went for the moray. I hadn't really planned to do it, but now, as Jane watched on, I was holding an angry 3-foot moray eel barehanded.
And no idea what to do with it.
And as long as we're talking about animals, here's what happened when I wrestled an alligator in Florida.
Okay, the idea... Oh, God, the breath. Okay.
I'm sitting on the back of this alligator, bending its head back.
Like this. Hold it with your chin. And let your hands go.
That's what's done.
Like that.
So if you can visualize an alligator with its head bent straight back.
And here's a story involving
me sitting out like a cowboy holding his head with my chin.
Shark I wrestled with in the waters off Cancun, Mexico. But finally... I grabbed one by the tail, hoping it would pull me along
an 8-foot
not
shark.
Whip around and do something else. It didn't, and so I got even braver. Don't ask me why.
I think the Jaws music was a good touch.
This is absurd. Who does this?
This guy does.
Now, of course, I don't need animals to get myself in trouble. Skateboards do just fine and gave me some of my most exciting times and most pain.
Like, for sure, man. Totally, totally radical or something.
You get the lingo down.
Lean forward and...
Totally stupid. This one I actually saw stars.
Now I'm not to do that.
Oh, yeah, that was so much fun. I did it again 1 year later.
Yeah.
Nothing to it. You just go over the edge and go down. Dropping off.
Yeah, right on my head.
Well, the helmet helped.
Well, not much.
We'll have more good company.
I could barely talk. I was live.
Well, let me tell you, I was lying through my teeth right there because I was hurt. My head had slammed into the floor. Luckily, I wore the helmet.
Yeah. That
now, here it is again. And watch my head bounce off the ramp right there. Well, after that, I never got on a skateboard again.
Yeah, I learned.
The moral of the story is...
don't ride the wild buffalo and don't get on a skateboard.
I like the taking the shark's tail and just kind of, you know, just swimming with the sharks. I think you've made a plot for every Discovery Channel TV show that's on right now, because I think we have a show on alligator wrestling and a show on, you know, shark hunting, and every show that's now currently making tons of money. You should get on these guys and take some of the credit for these shows.
I should get a writer's credit or residuals or something.
I think so. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have even more Gary Lumpkin Good Company audio. We'll talk a little bit more about the some days of Good Company and that unfortunate day in 1994 when it went away on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest Gary Lumpkin of KSGP's Good Company and media and voiceover work, acting, real estate. What else are you doing, Gary? What else have you been up to since Good Company folded away?
Pretty much just taking up space and being a drain on society at this point. I have kind of no purpose, and I just kind of look around. And yeah.
So you never loved media then, they're saying. You've been in media the whole time.
I do have a real estate license. It's been a little slow in that area, but I've been keeping fairly busy. I got a few other irons in the fire and some entrepreneurial stuff, but a real mixed bag of things. In fact, one of my oldest daughters about 6 months ago said, "You know, Dad, you really have too much free time. You need to get your fanny." I'm not sure that's exactly the word she used. But she's the oldest, so she's allowed to say what she says. And go back into teaching. Before I got into TV, in addition to being a football coach, I was actually a high school math teacher. And I went back to school at one point and got a master's. And at that time, I did substitute teaching. So anyway, so she's heard all those stories. He said, you know, go back and teach it, or just go be a substitute. You know, you like it, you're good at it. And so I said, oh, well, okay. So I started doing the paperwork, and luckily my transcripts and credentials were all still good, and so I substitute teacher for the last 3 months in the St. Paul schools.
Oh, great!
And we'll probably do it again. So that's kind of fun.
Well, you can take your good company hosting skills, bring to the classroom, get people excited about science or math. Now, as a substitute teacher, you're teaching everything from FIAD to math to science, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I could theoretically be anything. The credential that they gave me as a substitute is pre-K,
okay,
the littlest ones, up to adult, and I'm not sure what that means, and all subjects. So when the jobs come open, it's all computerized and it's pretty slick. On any particular day, the jobs available for the next day are posted until somebody grabs them. So I never went on an elementary school job, because I just couldn't do that.
But you've had four kids. You know what you're up against. You know when you go to a room with some preteens, you know what's going to happen.
But the little ones, I couldn't. You're right. Hey, you got to know, as a substitute teacher, when you show up in class, you can't necessarily see it, but the kids can. There's a big bullseye.
Oh, right
in the middle of your forehead, and you are a target for anything that they can think of that they could never pull on their regular teacher that they think they can get away with you.
Now, when you were a student, you would have never dreamed of that kind of thing, right? When you were a student in school and a substitute teacher came in, never used that to your advantage?
Well, you can imagine where this is going to go. I can remember my eighth grade math, my junior high math teacher, Mr. Toogood. Back in California.
Great name.
Yes, indeed. And looked at me and he said, "Lumpkin," because I was a pretty smart kid, but I was also a smart aleck. And he said, "Lumpkin, one of these days you're going to discover that natural intelligence, your native ability to get things right, is going to fail you. And this, all this screwing around you're doing, it's going to bite you in the..." And anyway, so the story went on from there. Well, my friends that I have continued to know all these have reminded me of that story a number of times over the years. Lumpkin, your native intelligence again. So anyway, I was a good student, but I did not get good marks in self-conduct and control. And it's full circle now. I have to.
Do we need to send Mr. Toogood some DVDs of all this great stuff that we do? Because we'll show him.
Yeah. It'd probably be a long distance call. I would imagine he's at that great elementary school or junior high in the sky. But then again, who knows? Maybe not. His words were prophetic. And everything that these guys. Although I got to tell you, the kids now are a little rougher around the edges. We were perhaps jerks, but we were not obscene jerks.
You were scamps.
We were, maybe.
Well, you know, kids now have technology to aid them in their shenanigans now. I mean, now they can probably, you know, send a mass tweet or text out to everyone and coordinate things. You actually had to do things with your paper and the 4 minutes between classes to do any kind of planned.
Bullying took work back then.
Yeah, bullying took work back then. We didn't need legislation against bullying because everything, you know, it was too tough to bully anyway.
That's it. It's now, and you talk about texting and tweeting. If you turn your back for more than 30 seconds, and then when you look back, 14 of them have got their thumbs working like crazy with some kind of electronic device.
They're
studying.
It's
unbelievable.
They're studying. They're reading a book online.
The addictive quality of that is unbelievable.
I was talking to a chiropractor, and she was saying actually people come in for thumbs. They have like tweet thumbs.
They must.
Instant message thumbs. I guess that's a thing now.
Carpal tunnel thumbs. It's unbelievable.
Let's, my guest Gary Lumpkin, let's talk about 1994. Did you see the end of Good Company? Did you see it happening, or just happened?
Had no clue. I think we had about a 45, maybe 60 day window of when we were told it was going to happen, and then it happened. So we I guess we went off the air right about June 1st, or thereabouts, and
because the show was making money and it was highly rated, so it was a little bit of a surprise, I think, to people in the in and out the industry.
Yeah,
it went away.
I don't really know the whole story. Probably if I did, I'd probably have to kind of fib or something, but I actually don't know. But I do know that we were making a lot of money, mm-hmm. but I know we were also spending a lot of money. We were a very expensive show. We had a big staff. We had a budget for traveling, although we got a lot of that traded out. You know, the old thing at the end of the show, transportation provided by
Republic Airlines.
Your medical fees, of course. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, your medical fees alone probably were a good budget portion.
Well, I had a lot of Band-Aids that they had to go through several boxes of Johnson & Johnson Band-Aids. But, the bottom line, I don't know what it was, but anyway, after 12 years. Although I will say this, it was a great show, and the Hubbard family was super good to us. And at a function a couple of years ago, I went to, it was actually the induction of Steve and Sharon into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame.
Right.
And Mr. Hubbard introduced them to the thing, is saying the nice words about them as being induced and everything. Inducted
Louis Anderson did too. He was there. He was the host that night. I was there.
Yep. Right. And in his remarks, Mr. Hubbard said, and you notice I still call him Mr. Hubbard because he just might have a spot for me, and I have to make sure. No, anyway. But he was really his family, and he was great to us. But he made the remark that we let good company, we cancel good company, or we brought it to an end. Probably one of the biggest mistakes in broadcasting I've ever made.
Right.
So we all, of course, immediately perked up in our chairs and hit each other in the rib. Did you hear that? Did you hear what he said? Did you hear it?
And I'm bringing it back next week. Everyone show up to work on Monday morning.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was nice to hear that for him to say that. And I bet he probably meant it. There was probably some second guessing on his part. But nevertheless, you got to know. You got to know when you're in broadcasting, TV-wise, and your gig here and the gig down the street and the gig around town. Sooner or later, it's going to come to an end.
Right.
It's just, you know, there aren't very many Tonight shows with Johnny Carson,
no,
or 60 Minutes with those people change. You know, I'm saying
they change by death. Unfortunately, they don't change by retirement.
Exactly, so there's sooner or later it's going to end. Usually sooner than later.
Now the taste and trends change so much now. I mean, the Tonight Show Johnny Carson probably wouldn't have lasted 30 years if it was to start the same kind of show today.
Maybe not
30 years from now. Maybe not. Maybe it would. But I think that the more technology, the more channels we have, the more, you know, you talk about satellite radio, terrestrial radio, HD radio, there's so many, you know, the niches are so specific that in order for a show to be a general show for a wide audience, it's really tough. And I think that you're not going to see shows lasting for 10 years, 12 years like Good Company did.
Well, I suppose that's true, although I got to say this about Steve, is that he was not only he and Sharon were, of course, the co-host, but he was the executive producer, and they would meet. One of the nice things about my job is that I never had to go to those meetings. Once again, that's part of leaving me alone. But they would meet every day about not only the show coming up, but the shows in the future and stuff like that. And if you would look at the content of the first month of Good Company and then look at the content of the show at the end, it was a totally different show. It had evolved, and he was really good at keeping it current and finding new segments. And you know, I mean, cooking. We had a pretty significant female demographic at that time of the day, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just cooking and fashion and stuff like that. And even if we had those, he kept him current and fresh.
And Steve Edelman, who we're talking about, he had a great passion for that show. He was not just the host. He was the writer, the producer, executive producer. I mean, that was everything about him and Sharon was that show.
Yeah. It was his deal, and Sharon, they fit together very perfectly, both on and off camera. She had a lot of, she contributed a lot too, that more than just as a host and so forth. But yeah, no question about it. He knew what he was doing, and he had a reason for doing what he did. He didn't make very many mistakes, he was thinking forward. And he would drive people nuts because he was, you know, very demanding and stuff like that. But it was all good stuff. It was all for the betterment of the show.
Well, you create a quality product. You're creating a product every single day. I mean, sometimes we laugh about putting up on an hour show a week, and you're putting an hour of TV a day with how many different segments, guests, an audience. You look at, you know, we were looking at some clips before. You got Jay Leno, you got Tom Petty, you have cooking segments. You got to get all the ingredients right. There's a lot of coordination has to happen in an hour of TV.
Well, the word got out in the PR circles and the marketing people of this show in the Twin Cities, and they made a point of making sure that the Twin Cities was on their circle of when they would send people around the country marketing their TV show, right, their book, right, their whatever they were peddling, because they were selling, somebody was selling something on every mm-hmm, segment. Mm-hmm. Okay. But we became a point, you have to go, yeah, you got to go to LA, you got to go to New York, you got to go to Chicago, but you got to go to the Twin Cities and you got to get on this good company, ABC affiliate show, because it's really good and they deliver an audience and it'll pay off.
And it did for a lot of people.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we had no trouble. We had no trouble booking. If a celebrity came to town, they were on our show. And if they didn't, they would be happy to be on it if we figured out a way to get them there.
One of the best videos that I've looked at so far is Louis Anderson on his way to L.A. You had a pretty long interview with him at the comedy club here in Minneapolis. I can't remember the name of it. But Louis, which people may know now from the diving show, but before he went to L.A. and made it big as a stand-up in L.A. nationally, you were just hanging with him here in Minneapolis and talking about his journey to as a
yep.
you know, local St. Paul guy, and he hadn't been in comedy that long when you talked to him.
No, he was well-known in the Twin Cities, but this, again, was pretty new in our time in the Twin Cities. And so they said, hey, there's this comedian. He's talking about moving to L.A. Go do a story on him. And so I went down to the Dudley Riggs, one of the Dudley Riggs facilities, and interviewed Louis. And I had never seen him perform and stuff like that, but I got to know him through the interview, and then we taped some of his stand-up, and of course he went on to be huge,
and,
so to speak.
And, well, literally, we'll leave that one alone. Gary, thank you so much. We'll be back next week with Barry Zavan inducted into the Broadcasting Hall of Fame. This is
what, that's it? No more? What are you talking about? I'm just getting warmed up. I haven't even told you the story about the duck and the chicken.
There is a 5-volume of this show. We're going to have you back quarterly.
I set myself on fire once. Did you hear about that?
Blast with Twin Cities on KLEB Club 1220.
I guess I'm done.